This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
Here is your state weekly crop and weather report. Much of the state got a break from dry weather conditions last week. The west-southwest part of the state received 2.59 inches of rain. Statewide precipitation averaged 1.45 inches, about a half inch above normal. There were 4.9 days suitable for field work for the week ending in August 10th. The average temperature was 72.1 degrees, 1.7 degrees below normal. Corn in the dough stage was rated at 77% compared to the five-year average of 62%. Corn dented was rated at 17% compared to the five-year average of 23%. Corn condition was rated at 82% good to excellent. Soybeans blooming reached 94% compared to the five-year average of 91%. Soybeans setting pods reached 79%, ahead of the five-year average of 66%. Soybean condition was rated at 78% good to excellent. Sorghum headed reached 78%, and sorghum turning color was rated 33%. Oat harvest reached 89% complete, compared to the five-year average of 91%. Pasture condition was rated at 1% very poor, 4% poor, 28% fair, 55% good, and 12% excellent. Topsoil moisture supply was rated at 2% very short, 17% short, 76% adequate, and 5% surplus. Subsoil moisture supply was rated at 2% very short, 23% short, 72% adequate, and 3% surplus. In the 1920s, U.S. corn farmers were still planting open-pollinated corn. About 1,000 genetically different varieties existed. Most of them were white-dent corn. A few were high-yielding yellow-dent varieties. They were popular throughout the Corn Belt and became even more so when swine feeding trials proved hogs did better eating yellow corn because it contained vitamin A. Reed's Yellow Dent was the most popular open-pollinated corn variety in states like Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, and Iowa. But the farther north you were, the less tolerant it was of the shorter, drier growing season. The University of Minnesota went to work on the problem and solved it with a yellow dent corn called Minnesota 13. These two varieties, says Forrest Troyer, a farmer who spent 7 years researching and writing about his favorite crop, set the stage for the development of hybrid corn. By 1920, the double-cross hybrid method had been developed by Donald Jones. Still, it remained difficult to find four inbreds good enough to make a double-cross to sell. Henry Wallace, who founded the Pioneer Seed Company in Iowa, sold the first double cross hybrid in 1924. It was called Copper Cross. It wasn't until 10 years later, in 1934, that hybrid corn varieties even made a dent in U.S. corn production. Forrest Troyer says that year, 0.3% of all the corn sold for seed in the U.S. was hybrid.
And Iowa was the fastest growing, partly because of the work that the editorials that Henry Wallace wrote for Wallace's Farmer. And by World War II, by 1941, 1942, I believe 90% of the corn in Iowa was hybrid, and the rest of the Corn Belt wasn't far behind, just a few more years, you know, that they, it was an amazing thing once it got going. It was quickly accepted.
In 1934, that 0.3% of hybrid seed sold in the U.S. came primarily from two companies, Pioneer and the Funk Brothers Seed Company of Bloomington, Illinois. In 1935, Troyer says the first Ag Experiment Station hybrid was introduced, U.S. 13. A year later, Iowa 939 was released. In those early years of hybridization of corn, it was thought farmers would buy the original material and then produce their own hybrids. That's how open-pollinated crosses had been adapted throughout the Midwest. But the model didn't work for hybrid corn, so the corn seed companies prospered. Pioneer and Funk, along with DeKalb, were the three largest. These three companies and experiment stations used the available open-cross yellow-dent corn to develop their hybrids. It was at this point that the majority of the genetic diversification of the domesticated corn plant was lost. Today's hybrid corn comes from about 8 genetically different open-pollinated yellow-dent corn lines. They include Lemming, Lancaster, Reed's Yellow Dent, Minnesota 13, Northwestern Dent, Funk's Yellow Dent, Troyer's Reed, and 176A.
But over time, the thing that happened is that those inbreds that came from those popular varieties became the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry. And what it really amounted to, as more emphasis was put on white adaptation of the hybrids, the inbreds from the varieties that did well over a more widely adapted area came to the forefront, and they're the backbone of the hybrid seed corn industry today.
Today, Forrest Troyer says half of the seed corn sold can trace its heritage to Reed's Yellow Dent. Another 20% is directly related to Lemming, Lancaster, Minnesota 13, and Northwestern Dent. It is a narrow genetic base from which to work. He says it confines the ability of corn breeders to continue improving Yellow Dent corn. And in a world which is expected to grow by 4 billion people in the next 30 years, that could be a problem. Continuing our discussion of the corn hybrid with Forrest Troyer, a farmer and man who wrote about and studied the development of corn for 7 years. If you think about it, says Forrest Troyer, the corn plant has been moved northward more than half a continent. The genetic pool from which it evolved has been sliced and diced by farmers and breeders in North America for about 3,000 years. Most of the selection pressure has come in the last 200 years, when the gene pool was divided 1,000 ways, and then more than 99% of those crosses were eliminated. That leaves a very small domesticated gene pool from which corn breeders can draw to improve the crop. Troyer says it is vital, then, that geneticists and corn breeders understand how that pool was narrowed. He suggests they start by reading the works of Charles Darwin.
Darwin's advice was to study the plant, to look at it sharply, to relate what you're seeing to the information that you've learned about botany, about how a plant works, and then through that decide what it needs to do better. Adaptation is the critical thing. Adaptation is the sole driving force as far as biological evolution is concerned. It's what makes everything happen. And so it makes all the sense in the world to think in terms of how can I make this plant better adapted to get higher yielding, more reliable corns.
The second notion Troyer says corn breeders should think about is the importance of wide adaptation. He says weather is the reason hybrid corn breeders narrowed the gene pool early in the 20th century. It was easier to market and grow a corn crop which could adapt to widely variable weather conditions.
I think most farmers understand that maybe better than most plant breeders. And so wide adaptation is a very important trait. We can select for this by having more test locations, by looking the things that don't jump around so much at different locations and different seasons, you know, very high yielding here, very low yielding over here, and so forth. We want those ones that can take the give and take that the environment puts out.
After understanding the relationship of weather to the crop and how it was used to widely adapt the corn plant across the U.S., Troyer believes the corn plant breeders of today and tomorrow will be better able to pinpoint the genetic differences which could result in an improvement. He also says the gene pool could be expanded by looking into the old crosses and the wild relatives of the corn plant, or by altering it with the genes from another organism. To him, the science remains only the science if it's addressed cautiously. In that caution, he says the world could find another green revolution. That's all for this afternoon's Farm Show. For WSMI, I'm Angela Besh. Thanks for tuning in.